Hi, Edward Olmos here.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very good, Alex. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, it's good talking to you, too. So I wanted to chat with you about directing Battlestar Galactica, The Plan. I thought we'd start off sort of talking about the fact you've directed a couple of episodes of the show, as well as a few movies, American Me, Jack and Marilyn, of course. How did you first approach the Battlestar people, though, about saying, hey, I want to direct an episode of the show and, you know, take it from the acting to the directing?
Actually, it was them that had come up to me and asked me if I would be willing to direct. And
I am triple-checking who I actually
am. After right after the initial miniseries was over and we started getting into the regular episodic series, by the second show they asked me to directed the seventh show, or no, the ninth show of that first season.
You know, directing a TV movie or just, you know, a DVD movie and whatnot, obviously that's a little more to take on, and The Plan is obviously very big in scope. What challenges did you find directing the movie that you aren't expecting, say, from directing the individual episodes?
I think it was one of the highest honors I've gotten in doing the show was being asked by the studio to direct the film. The film is definitely the most ambitious piece of work that's been done on the Battlestar Galactica front. It definitely encompasses a perspective that we all knew could become a very needed perspective, which is the Cylons' point of view of why and how they did what they did. So for me, it became a very, very strong commitment to the decimation of humanity and showing what happened. So the first half hour is just brutal. And then the second, from there and on out, you start to see the outcome of this and what happened to them and why it happened the way it did.
Since the beginning of the show, in the credits, it's always said the Cylons have a plan, and obviously this is filling that in. Why was it important to do that after the show was over, do you feel?
I feel that it was the best time to do it. I mean, I think that this really is a great accompaniment to the show as an entirety. I think once you see this, you'll want to go back, and then you'll realize what was going on at the exact same time that other things were going on, because there are points within the plan that really signify what's going on in the front story. And so you realize where you are, and then when you're watching the front story, which is the episodic, you know, hours or years of the episodes that we did, you'll say, oh my God, do you realize this was what was going on when the Cylons were thinking and doing this and that and whatever. And then you realize how incestuous the destruction of humanity was and how difficult it was for them to get past the dangers that were incurred by the Cylons to the humanity and how close they were to the annihilation of the human species. They're very, very, very close. And what beats them? Find out what beats the Cylon and what stopped this from becoming a reality. And it's breathtaking when you realize what it is that does it.
Yeah. Directing-wise, when you were coming at this episode, was there a mission statement that you had? Was there something you said, all right, first we're gonna talk about the visuals. We're going to go from the basis of the script. We're going to go from the basis from the acting. Is there something you as a director tend to focus on first and then build everything from there, or is it everything working as a glorious whole?
Well, it's pretty much because we had the front story so strong and we knew exactly what the front story was, that the backstory or the parallel story in this case was pretty well defined in respects of, you know, how we were going to move. But what we didn't know was what was the story, and so what is the story inside of this? And that's when you realize what it is. And I don't want to, you know, expose it any more than saying that it's the most basic of human understandings is what destroyed the possibilities of the overthrow of the humanity by the machine.
Sure. This may be just the marketing perspective, but as far as I've seen from the stills, the DVD version seems to be a little bit racier than what was allowed on TV. Was this a conference conscious effort on your part as director to really push the envelope because this is going to be on DVD rather than TV, or is it just something that made sense story-wise?
Oh, it definitely was something that it's a reality of the piece that should have been there always. And I think had it been done for another kind of network, more cable, you know, pay-per-view cable, it would have been a much more intense ride than we even had on Sci-Fi. But not to say that Sci-Fi didn't deserve it, and they got a full, strong, emotional ride. We're just talking about the visuals being more honest to the moments that we're talking about. So in other words, the reality is a little bit stronger in the DVD version.
This is actually a question from a reader of the site. Dave Hafner was wondering, how much of the movie revolves around the mystical, or I guess religious aspects of Battlestar versus the gritty political side? And it's obviously something that's balanced throughout the run. I guess he was just curious where the focus is for this particular movie.
You got to remember that the religious aspects of this is taken from the perspective of the human beings and personified by the fact that Cylons believe in just one God. And so basically, the characters that we ride the story with and who really perpetrated this entire annihilation of humanity, they really aren't people or machines that Cylons that really have God at heart. You know, at the you'll see how well that is defined at the very end of the plan. It's phenomenal how it unfolds and what you come to learn. So, in other words, religion is not a part of the plan. Never was,
sure.
And it became obvious that it became one of the reasons why there was a split within the actual Cylon world itself.
Sure. You know, at this point, we've seen, obviously, with the series, what happens to the crew of Battlestar, and with the plan, we're seeing the parallel along there, and even with the Caprica series on Sci-Fi, we're seeing what happens before that. Do you feel like there's other stories to tell, or are there other stories you want to tell from this universe?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of them, and I'd love to be able to do that. It's up to the owners of the properties to see where they're going to
sure.
go. I know that Glenn Larson is in right now in the middle of creating the full length motion picture that'll be released in theaters, and we'll see how that works out. And I wish him nothing but success because he deserves it. He's done a wonderful job of creating a platform in which this Battlestar Galactica was allowed to understand itself and push forward, and it actually changed the course of a lot of people's feelings about the future and about our present day and the way we think about it. So I'm very grateful to Glenn Larson for creating Battlestar and and just wish him nothing but success.
Could you talk a little bit about directing yourself as an actor? What the challenges are there, just from is it something you relish? Is it something you're excited about? Do you have, you know, a second on set that's saying, maybe not that, maybe a little more of that? Or is it just trusting yourself as much as possible?
Yeah, I think that's what you end up doing, and that's allowing yourself to experience it for what it is. And everyone knows what they have to be doing. It makes it... for me, it makes it very, very strong pressure to do things correctly from the very beginning. So, I liked it. I mean, granted, I love being directed. I love the process of whether I'm in front of the camera or behind the camera, and when I combine both of them, it's okay. I've been doing it a long time. I started off. Back in 1985 was the first time I ever directed myself, and that was on a thing called Bushido, and it was a Miami Vice episode, and that was the first time I ever directed, and that was the first time that I have ever directed per se film. I had directed theater, but not film, and so it was the first time, and that was in 85, so it's been quite a few years of doing it, and of course I did American Me, which was a very strong piece of work also.
Yeah. Do you find yourself going towards one or the other as time goes on, or is it you want to do everything, the whole caboodle all the time?
No, I mean, basically I'll do it whenever I have to, but, you know, it's either one or all, you know, all of the above. But, you know, producing, directing, marketing, distributing, writing, directing, you know, acting, that they're all a privilege. It's this whole way of living is such an incredible privilege that no matter what I'm involved in inside of this, it's fantastic. You know, I'm producing pieces of work right now that other people are directing, other people are acting in, other people are marketing, distributing in Britain, and I'm just helping in the construct of finding the money for the pieces, and or I'm helping in respect of helping with the script in many, many cases. And so it all is just such a fascinatingly beautiful world that a kid from East L.A., the way I was born and raised, I bless every moment that I'm awake and that I'm living inside of this world. It's not easy. By far, the arts are not an easy way of living because there's no security. None. So you constantly wake up every day, and your security comes by way of just waking up in the morning. If you woke up in the morning, you're secure that you're at least going to be able to live the day. But as far as your artistic endeavor, will it be accepted? Will it not be accepted? Most of the time, it's not accepted. Most of the ideas that you come up with don't get done. And then there are some times when they do, and some people do it constantly, and others do it for a period of time very successfully and then can't do it anymore. They're not allowed to. In the case of myself, I'm creating a lot of the work that I've done since the very beginning. Back in 1981, I produced my first piece, The Ballad of Gregorio Cortez, and that was the first thing I'd ever produced. And I can tell you that from that moment on, I haven't stopped producing. You know, I try to produce as much as possible because that means that you're working. And you don't have to wait for somebody to call you on the telephone and say, you know, oh, I got another job for you.
Two last little questions. One, just to get back to the plan for a moment. Is there a moment, I guess, without spoiling anything, that you are particularly proud of that people should keep their eyes out for?
Yeah, the performance of Dean Stockwell and the performance, all the performances across the board are just unbelievable what these, you know, actors have given us, and the reality that they created. And of course, the newest one, artist that came in to work with us, Lamari Nadal, actually gets presented in the miniseries for one split second, and that presentation in the miniseries, and then she never worked again on the show, came back to become a character that we not only appreciate, but we're thankful that we got to meet her and got to understand her. And it's an amazing contribution to the show, and it connects so well. It's unbelievable. When you see the miniseries and you see her coming, how she gets presented, and then you don't see her again till the very very end. It's the plan, and you realize she was on board the whole time and going through her whole situation. It's amazing. It's very beautifully scripted by Jane Esperson. So my love to the writers of this program, and especially to those that, because all the writers got together to think the story through for the plan, and then Jane Esperson was given the responsibility of writing it.
And last little very, very geeky question, so I do apologize about this, but with J.D. Bamner, Tom O'Pennicott, and Michael Hogan all appearing on Dollhouse this season, when will you be showing up?
I think I'm going to come in probably in the 17th season, if they make it.
Great. Well, we'll be DVRing that, so thank you.
That's funny.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And we're all looking forward to the movie.
Thank you so much, Alex, and I hope you enjoy it.
Comic Book Club is recorded in front of a live audience every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater in New York City. To find out more info or to listen to additional episodes, go to popcultureshock.com/CBClub. 1, 2, 3.